This episode was created with the support of Free FM, Hamilton, New Zealand's community access media organisation. Visit us at freefm.org.nz.
Thank you so much for being here again. Welcome back to Hannah Worldwide and Friends, the podcast where traveler, experts, and adventurer share their stories. If you want to learn about what it's like living in another country, you want to experience a new culture, or you just love to travel, this podcast is for you. Or maybe you need to get out of your comfort zone, and this podcast might be the inspiration you need. You can find me on YouTube, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hi everyone, welcome. Please welcome with me Carla Smith from the UK. Carla has been living abroad for quite a few years already, has been living in the French Alps, is living currently in New Zealand, and will start her new adventure soon. What that means, she will tell us as well. But thank you so much for being here and having time to share your story, Carla. Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you so much. I'm so happy to be here. I'm so glad you reached out. I've been loving listening to your podcast, by the way. It's like a beautiful mix of stories and cultures and like experience. It's been so good. It's been so good. And I'm excited to share my story too.
Thank you so much. It's so nice to have you as one of them, one of the episodes where people hopefully can just, you know, either relate to, learn something, feel like, okay, that's the push. And now I finally managed to get out of the door and book the ticket or whatever it is.
100%.
Thank you so much. I am wondering, coming from the UK, what made you even consider leaving the UK and living in a different country and not just traveling around?
So, do you know what? It's so funny because I never cared about traveling growing up. I couldn't understand why people wanted to travel. I was like, what? Why do you want to just go on holiday? Why would you want to go and live somewhere else that you don't know, like away from your family? And then I was living in London. I was about 6 months out of drama school, so I'd just done my degree, and I unfortunately my partner at the time left me, and it left me so blindsided, and I was so upset. Like, poor 20-year-old Carla was an absolute mess. I had a friend doing a season in the French Alps, a place called Mirabel. He messaged me and he was like, Carla, come out here for a week, blow off some steam, we'll party, we'll ski, it'll be amazing. So I popped out for a holiday to see him and basically never came back. I like didn't get on my plane back. I called up a load of places, managed to bag a job as a chalet hostess with like no experience. Wow. And that like totally, that was the ramp that led me to traveling. So truly before that, I'd never even thought about it. I wanted to live in London. I wanted to, you know, be an actress and voiceover artist. And then going out for a week, and I was like, wait, people are living like this? This is so fun. This is a whole different culture and I can live here. So yeah, after that, I promised myself it was just going to be that one season. Went back to London. Within a week, I'd got a job in the Channel Islands on a little island called Alderney. Promised myself that was it. Then did five more seasons in the French Alps and Alderney, and then decided to go to New Zealand. So nothing really, apart from that one thing, sparked it, to be honest.
It is crazy, but it totally makes sense, at least to me, that a life event that really messed up your whole world or the understanding of how your life looks like. Like, you might have already thought of how your life looks like with your partner at that time. And because that completely got crushed, like that idea of how your life looks like, and it's just, your world is upside down anyways. And I think a lot of people say, just get out of your everyday life, your routine, your environment. And even if it would have been just to go on a holiday, definitely makes a difference to getting a clear head again and realizing, okay, what do I want? Where do I see myself? What is my next step? And that you ended up staying there because you liked it so much, and mm-hmm. you actually realized a lifestyle away from London is possible, is so cool. Because sometimes people think it's so hard. I will never find a job. I will never be able to go anywhere. I don't have the qualification. And it's just another really cool example that you don't need that to be able to live somewhere else.
Yes.
But how did you actually end up getting that job? Did they just interview, or did they just see you were there? You seemed smart enough to do the job, and then...
Yeah, gosh, it was so crazy. This is going back to like a whole different Carla, like a party animal, you know, when I was like early 20s. But there is such a high turnover in like ski resorts of chalet hosts, chefs, drivers, etc. Because one, because of injury, there's so many people, you know, you get wow. a bit too excited on the slopes and you get an injury and you get sent home. And that's what had happened in this case. So they were looking for a chalet hostess to start ASAP. And I think it was like the second or third company I called, and I just called and said, hey, like, wow. I'm on holiday. I'm loving it out here. Any chance you've got any jobs going? They said, yeah, we're actually looking for a chalet hostess. Wow. I met the resort manager in a local pub. We had a pint. And I think I was really open about the fact that I'd worked in bars, but this was a whole new world for me. I'd never even, like, you know, done anything chalet-esque. So I was really open about that. And they said, kind of, the passion that you've got to stay here is a really big thing that we're looking for. And the fact that you do have some hospo experience and you're willing to kind of just try and hit the ground running, because we were 3/4 of the way through the season at that time. And they hired me. So again, it shows that you don't need absolutely every qualification. You've just got to go and give it a go. You don't need to, you know, I'm a perfectionist. These days, I think everything has to be, the boxes have to be ticked before you can, you know, try something new. But actually, you can just go make a few phone calls.
Yes.
Start a new life.
Yeah, what I've noticed is that personality is sometimes so much more. If you are willing to be really honest, I think a lot of people look for honesty to trust a person. And a personality that they can work with. Yeah. And I think because they say personality you can't train and you can't give someone, but you can train someone in skills or other things. Like, you can learn so much, but personality you just can't. So I guess that's really a big lesson I feel like people should know about as well, even though it's not always easy. But since I am not a ski person, what does a ski chalet hostess do?
Yeah, absolutely.
What is that?
So it kind of depends. There's different kind of levels of chalets and chalet companies. Like, a kind of, you get your more budget ones and you get your high-end ones. I managed to bag a job with a high-end company. So in each chalet for us, there was a chef, a host, a driver, and then like a kind of a helper that did a little bit of driving and a little bit of hosting. So quite a big team usually like probably groups around 8 to 12 people. Mm-hmm. And hostess job is to get up there early in the morning before the guests wake up, clear the bottles from the night before, set the table while the chef is getting breakfast ready, and then you serve the breakfast whilst trying to kind of pop up to the bedrooms and start cleaning the bedrooms. Then there's like half an hour of chaos while the guests are getting ready to go skiing. Once they've headed out, you clean the chalet top to bottom so it's nice and sparkly for them to arrive home. Then you get to head out for the day. So you get to head out skiing. You get to go and have a nap if you're a bit hungover. You get to go and have a lovely, long, cheesy lunch with your friends. listen to some live music, and then you head back into the chalet for evening service. Mm-hmm. So you head back in, usually once the guests have kind of got home and had a bit of a chill out, and you're there serving drinks, and then you're helping the chef to serve like a beautiful 5-course meal and drinks and whatnot, and there for whatever else the guests need. It's an incredible, cool. It sounds like hard work. It is hard work, but it's so fun, especially if you've got a good group of guests. Like, that week is just so fun.
Yeah, it sounds like it. And as a personality that is outgoing, I think it's relatively easy then to enjoy this time as well. I can imagine like introverts might have a little bit of a tougher time, but yeah, you can definitely make the most of it to have in between shifts or in between tasks like this break as well, and enjoy your time.
Absolutely.
Really cool. And what we quickly talked about before we started this episode, you also started having your own podcast, baby, with a friend, I assume you did it with a friend together.
Yeah, yes.
And you interviewed people on those ski resorts and places and chalets. And can you remember what was, in your opinion, the craziest story you've heard?
Oh, Hannah, that is such a hard question, because we had so many crazy stories. We had to dedicate episodes to people's like anonymous stories that they could send in. It's weird saying this in New Zealand, because there's not so much of a huge drinking culture here, but there's a heavy drinking culture in like ski resorts, so there's a lot of like drink fueled shenanigans. I don't think I could say one specific story, but we actually did an episode with my first ever chef, so the chef that I got that job with, and she has done so many seasons. We actually had to do a two-part episode, because it was just so full. She's worked in Canada, like all over the world as a chef for different places, and she's got some hilarious stories. I can't remember any off the top of my head, but the podcast is full of mad stories, because that's the kind of people those resorts attract.
Absolutely, yeah. So all these stories about the ski resorts and what you just said, like there's so much going on with heavy drinking culture, but it must have also its sides where it's not that fun, not that easy, and not just the happy phases. Can you tell us a tiny bit about those ones as well?
Absolutely. And this is a really, really important thing for me, especially towards the end of my seasons in Maribel. I noticed there was a tendency for a certain type of person that kind of was trying to maybe run away from something, or like numb, you know, with everyone should go and do a couple of party seasons anyway. But I really did notice that there was a lot of mental health kind of coming up a lot with different people that I was working with, or different aspects, because it's really, really full on. You are working. The laws have changed now, or the rules have changed now, and you get 2 days off a week. But when I worked, if you worked in a chalet, you only had 1 day off a week, and you're going in twice a day. And the rest of that time is, like I said, you're either out during the day on the slopes, and then there is a lot of drinking in the daytimes and evening, and it takes a toll on you. I was so, that first season, I'd come from a really strict drama school where like there wasn't a lot of partying. It wasn't like a normal uni. So I was really letting my hair down. But by the end of the season, I was like so fatigued. My mental health had taken a real real downturn, and going back each year, I had to kind of learn how to control that, because there is that darker side of like, actually you can be drinking too much and pushing yourself way too hard and really not getting enough sleep and all of that jazz. So it's not just fun, you know, you really do have to look after yourself. And by the end, when I was going back, you know, when I lived in France year round for that last few seasons, the last few years, and life was a lot different, you know, turning down the pub for just like a nice quiet evening in. It definitely is a learning curve, and I think that's the same wherever you go. You can get caught up in the excitement of it all, But actually, mm-hmm. at some point, you have to ground yourself and remember that you're only human and there's only so much you can put your body through.
100%. That is so true. Especially a lot of people use the fun and the alcohol also, as you said, like to escape something mm-hmm. or to numb something. And in the end, because you are still you and you are taking yourself with you wherever you go, even if you numb yourself in the moment, the next day when you are not or when you're sober, it's still there. And
exactly,
you don't want to be drunk without end, right? So mm-hmm. what would you think helped you most to actually take care of your mental health? Like you said, sometimes trade in like a night, a quiet night, but also were there any tools you were able to use later on where you thought, okay.
Yeah, great question. And actually, if I'm looking at my travels as a whole, mental health is really, really close to me and something that I've always struggled with from a young age, but more so as I've kind of progressed as a person, I've become really passionate about sharing mental health and just releasing that stigma around it is so important. And I think it goes hand in hand with traveling. There can be this really wonderful side of traveling, but you've still got your mental health. And it's like you said, like it's your body and it's in the same way it's you. You've still got your same mind wherever you go.
Yeah.
Luckily, I was already doing a lot of work for my mental health. I think even back then I'd sort of started therapy, but I think one of the big things is a support network, being open, like saying to people, and that's unfortunately one of the hardest things as well, to let people know, you know, like if I was having a bad time. I remember my second or third season, I had a real dip with my mental health at the beginning of the season, and I told my resort manager, I told my chef, you know, I told all the guys I worked with and my housemates, like, I'm just having a bit of a hard time, so I might not be myself, you might just need to give me a little bit of grace. And even if they didn't quite understand, we were all quite young. I think it really helps just to say, hey, if I'm not quite myself, there is a reason, like, and I asked you to understand that. And having friends back home, wherever I am, I know that I've got around the world now a support network that I can reach out to at any time. Journaling and books really helped me as well. I don't think I was so good at the beginning at watching how much I was drinking. I think that was probably my down. If I want to say I had that tool at the beginning, but I definitely didn't. But now, you know, I'm okay. I've had a pretty big, you know, night out last weekend. Let's just keep it a little bit more chill this week, because even if it doesn't feel like it, subconsciously that alcohol is doing something to me. And
you can have
your friends around for a movie and have just as good as a time as heading out and having a bottle of wine.
I think having
a big toolbox wherever you go, and knowing that it is there for when you do have those wobbly moments, which everyone has, especially when you move over the other side of the world, is so important. And I would really recommend everyone to have that imaginary toolbox, you know, alongside their suitcase.
100%. I think because I'm a bit like you in that aspect as well. For me, it's really important to be open about my mental health and about mental health in general, because I also had or struggled with my mental health when I was early 20s. And it was still that time where no one really wanted to talk about. And mm-hmm. especially the older generation didn't really think it's a thing. So for me, I felt still quite ashamed, and I only told the people that I really fully trusted. But slowly during the years after, I've noticed so many more friends were impacted as well. And I could then be there for them because I understood so much how it felt like and what helped me. And so I came to New Zealand and I've noticed there is a big mental health issue here too.
Oh my God, yeah, huge.
Like, very big. And I just loved being the one who was able to be very open and honest about it already.
Yeah.
And I think that helped my friends here. It helped me as well. And I just felt like we could connect on a very different and deeper level as well. Would you think the moment when you went to that ski resort, that was kind of in the first instant like an escape. But the decision then to come to New Zealand, that had nothing to do with like a breakup and you just didn't know where to go. What was your reason to come from that fun ski resort time, you were still young, to coming to New Zealand at the other end of the world?
I think there were a few different factors that I really was settled in France. I'd got my French residency and there was a part of me that was that felt like I was happy to stay there forever. But you know, when you get something and you instantly don't want it anymore, I got my French residency and then I was like, hang on, I don't want to settle. I've not seen enough of the world. Like now that I kind of have done these baby steps and I have almost a comfort zone in going back and forward during the summers and winters, I know I can do that now. Like, what's the next thing I can do? What's the next part of, like, what else can I do? What am I capable of? And I was, even though I never had really had a passion for traveling, New Zealand had always been on my list to visit. I just thought the landscape looks so incredibly different than the UK. It was something that I couldn't fathom and felt like I needed to see. And at the time, the visa cutoff was 30 and I was 20. I would have been kind of 27 ish. And I almost got this itch of wanting to do the next thing, you know, okay, I've done something close to home now. I want to do the next thing. I want to go further. And I thought, God, if I want to kind of do Canada, Australia, New Zealand, I should start, you know, 2 years ago, really, to hit the to get there before like the visa cutoffs. So I just did it. I was like, okay, let's do it. Let's just apply. We'll see if I get the visa and that will kind of show my path. And I just applied and got a reply within like 10 days. I was so shook. It was just post COVID and they were just letting people back in. I did. I think I needed to prove to myself that I could do the next thing and go alone somewhere across the other side of the world and tick off, now that I knew I did like living somewhere completely new and I could just go sort of by myself, make new friends, have a horrible couple of first weeks where you go, oh my God, what have I done? This is so uncomfortable. And then settle in. And I was ready to do it, on a bigger scale, I guess.
Yeah, I have so many moments from what you just said where I kind of, recall I had the same because I was also 27 at that time. I also felt like, because after traveling quite a bit and then going for a holiday by myself, and like it wasn't quite by myself, but then I would catch up with a friend who was already in the country, but I had a few days by myself. Mm-hmm. And I feel like then my friends went overseas for a year and I just thought, I need to prove to myself that I am able to do the next step and to grow my confidence as well and to live in a different country by myself. So just kind of similar experience that you had, and also this little achievement, like you go baby steps and you feel braver and braver and you think like, okay, now I kind of can't go back anymore.
I totally agree. It is. And it's something to be so proud of as well, hey? Like, look at us. Yeah. We did the steps. That's so cool, hey?
Absolutely. And I want to come to one point as well, because you could have any time said, okay, I did it. I will go back to London now. But you didn't and you don't. And I want to come back to that as well. But I just wanted to ask you a couple more questions about your time here in New Zealand.
Yeah, absolutely.
And did you notice any difference in mental health struggles or challenges in general from when you went abroad in Europe, you stayed in France, and then coming to New Zealand? Because I feel like mentally it's still a different thing to know you can be in a flight back home within like 3 hours, or it's taking you 2 days even to go over. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you have noticed from that difference from here and from Europe, but also just in age, like you have been older now? Are there different challenges because of who you are now, what you know now? And do you deal with it different as well?
Yeah, totally. Perfect question, actually, because when I came to New Zealand, I had a really quite a bad mental breakdown. I don't quite know why still. And I don't like it when I don't know why things happen. I like it. I'm anxious. And if I really think about it, I know why. But, and I was really enjoying myself here. This is probably like the first 4 to 6 weeks that I was here. But I was incredibly anxious. So anxious all the time, just really, you know, in that state where you're kind of on autopilot because your heart rate's going to go in and there's something, you're always in fight or flight. And there were times when I would just kind of start crying and I'm like, why am I crying? Like, I'm in New Zealand, I've made it. And there were these two really opposing emotions of like pride and excitement. And then just like really fear and like unknown, some loneliness. Oh my God. And I was really hard on myself, as a lot of people with mental health often are. And I booked a couple of therapy sessions with, I have a wonderful therapist back home who luckily will, wherever I am in the world, will make time for me and kind of booked in a couple of sessions with her. And she was, you know, a fountain of knowledge as always. But she was like, Carla, what do you mean? You're not sure why you're anxious. You've just moved literally as far as you can go from your home, from your friends and your family. You don't know anyone. You don't know the people you're living with. You don't have a job yet. You know, you don't know your way around. You didn't have data on your phone for a while. Yeah. You are in a completely new world by yourself. Yeah, that's going to shake anyone up. And have some compassion for yourself. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah, no, that checks out. Everything is really scary. And being able to, I think the difference that how I would have reacted before is probably to run straight away. There was a time in Maribel where my mental health got bad and I did go home for a week because it was so easy. And not that wasn't the right thing to do, but it was easy. But here it was like, can't really just pop home for a few days and hug my mum.
Yeah.
So the ability to push through it and have like faith in yourself, knowing that you've done this kind of thing before, maybe not to this extent emotionally, but you will get through it. And you've just got to have self-compassion and try and just do it baby steps. Again, I'm a perfectionist, so I didn't like that everything wasn't perfect and easy and everything. And then I'd also say the other time that kind of thing has been quite prevalent is when there was some family stuff going on back home, you know, family illnesses or even in good ways, babies being born and a lot of things happen in our family all at once, as it often does. And I just had never felt the distance like I did at that time. I've never really, I do miss my family as everyone does, but it's not like a heartbreak for me.
Yeah.
But that time I was like, oh my God, I want to be there so badly. Even the time difference, you know, I was getting updates 12 hours after everyone else, which made me feel
left out
and like almost jealous that everyone was able to start grieving or being excited like 12 hours before me. That was really, really hard. And I didn't realize that was something I could feel, and that, you know, and it opens up another line of empathy. Like, wow, people that say they're homesick, that's probably what it feels like. And it hurt.
Yeah.
But again, tools that I didn't used to have is grounding myself, doing all that beautiful self-compassion stuff and in that toolbox, journaling, getting back into yoga, making sure I'm meditating, making sure I'm booking in the FaceTimes with the family back home, sending little messages just to say, hey, thinking of you, I know it's 3 a.m., but like, if you've got time to send a voice note, it would be really comforting to hear your voice, you know, doing all that good self-care.
Yeah, I can absolutely understand you so well.
Yeah.
And how you said, like, little things that you never thought you could be sad about all of a sudden come up slowly. I remember because you said you were jealous sometimes. And oh my God, I don't know. I don't think I have shared that before, but I have my best friend and I know her since I am 15 and she is part of my family. And I think my parents also see her as part of the family. And she's also really close to my brother. because we just had so much time together, and because they lived in the same city, they could spend time with each other. Yeah. And then at one point there was a family thing where maybe even my mom's birthday, where my mom and her boyfriend went to their city, and then they all did something together. Mm-hmm. And then they sent me photos, and I should have been just like, oh, it's so nice. But it felt like a little bit of, yeah, that jealousy that I can't be there. I can't be with my best friend. I can't see my family. I can't spend the day with them. So those moments, or like even little things that my cousins have kids and the kids don't really know who I am.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like that really hit me hard. So this year I actually made an effort. I went back for Christmas, and then I went back for two weddings, and my heart really was so full when my cousin's little kids remembered my name. And
oh, yes.
I was so nice. And the little one came and yelled my name a few times and ran towards me. And I was like, oh,
that is
so much.
That fills your cup, hey. I totally agree. It is those little sacrifices we have to make that you're allowed, you know, it's so valid to feel jealous, upset, sad, but it is part of the give and take of living across the other side of the world.
Absolutely. But you said something really important there as well, which is that self-compassion. Like, we know the word compassion, and we always try to see it in the way how we see other people, or how we relate to other people, or how we treat other people. But when it comes to ourselves and to have self-compassion, I feel like a lot of people, or most of us, have problems with that.
Oh, yeah.
And we are so hard on ourselves, and just we are so critical as well, sitting down thinking, why am I anxious right now? Like, nothing really happened. What the heck is going on? But then really realizing you just did that massive thing of moving so far away. And then luckily, thank God, you had someone to remind you on that.
Yeah.
And to kind of give you that little moment of, please just, you know, have that self-compassion and be kind and gentle to yourself, because that is what we need to be doing as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I totally agree. Not only, you know, human beings in general, but especially as travelers. God, it's hard. You're on flights for however many hours. You don't know anyone. You're in a new country. Oh, every traveler needs a big dose of self-compassion, 100%.
Absolutely. And I think even then we can relate so much more to other traveler, and we can be so much more compassionate to the people who might be a bit of a loner. Even if it's not a traveler, but just the fact that you know how it feels to be alone, to be maybe excluded, or to not have friends yet. If you see someone who is a little bit on the side, a bit introvert, maybe like a little outcast in a group, you can relate so much more and might be the person who can, you know, lift them up. Even if you might not be their new best friend, but you can give them a smile, you can talk to them. And I think that's very beautiful as well, what we learn from getting out in the world and being a stranger in a new country.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. Yeah, you learn so much by being a stranger somewhere else, don't you? Yeah.
Yeah. Have you ever had like a negative experience coming to new countries from other people who have been living in that country?
Not particularly. I think France, the French culture isn't that warm and welcoming. And that was difficult, but in such small chunks because it's such an English community there. But sometimes, you know, things like trying to practice your French, and they just do not have time for it, and they just reply to you in English. But I wouldn't say that was on like a huge scale, because you know, it is such an English community. Alderney, when I moved there, the literal opposite, the most welcoming place I have ever, ever been. And if you are in France or the UK, or you're ever in that part, you must visit Alderney, because it's hard to explain without being there, but it's just a tiny slice of paradise with like a certain type of community. The community is so kind of intertwined and close. I always say this one story that from the first season I went, I did my first shift at the restaurant I was working at, and you know, obviously met a handful of people, went home, and then I was walking down the street the next morning to go to my shift, and so many people said hi to me. They're like, oh hi, oh Carla, yeah, you just moved here. Hi. And I was like, I've never met you before, how do you know who I am? Or, and it's just, you know, that's it. Oh, there's a new person working at the pub, and there's such an influx of people in the summer because it's such summer tourism. It's so incredibly welcoming, and I've got lifelong friends now. And I go back next week, actually, this time next week. Yay. I will have landed back on Alderney, and I can't wait. And it's been, you know, a year, but it doesn't matter because I know it's going to be welcoming. And yeah. I think, gosh, I feel like I've sound really privileged in this for this question. But New Zealand wise, I was incredibly lucky to enter housing with two girls that were really, really open to inviting me into their friend groups and helping me meet people. And I am so grateful for that. And I talk about it all the time that my experience in New Zealand would have been so different if I didn't quite quickly meet a really beautiful community of women here.
Yeah.
Because we have a really lovely community. And just like you were saying, if there's someone new to town, they get added into this like Facebook group, and we, you know, do arts and crafts night. Or can someone a few weeks ago said like, I'm kind of new, I don't know anyone yet, would anyone be willing to have a coffee? And I was like, absolutely, I've been there. Let's just chat for an hour. So I haven't had that kind of unwelcome feeling anywhere, but I can completely see how that would happen. I just feel very, very lucky in the communities I've entered that hasn't been the case.
Yeah,
and you know, I'm aware that it could happen, you know, in my future, and it is a fear, but we move.
Yeah, and I think, of course, it's fair to have a fear before it happens, but if you are capable of just, you know, letting it come to you and you see how it's going and you don't fear what hasn't happened yet, which I feel like is the hardest thing, but yeah, as you said, like it hasn't happened to you yet, and you know it might be possible that that might happen to you eventually, but maybe not, you know. Maybe
you're right. Yeah.
Always attract the right people into your life, and you just have this amazing experience of people who are lovely inviting you into their community and just make you feel welcome. So,
Yeah,
we don't know.
Manifest it.
Absolutely. I am still really curious about one fact. So you mentioned you were kind of wanting to stay in New Zealand, but because your visa is expiring, you now made the decision, drum roll, to go to Canada.
Yeah. Incredibly bittersweet, but yeah, that's the plan.
Exactly, and that bittersweet, I would love to dive a little bit into that as well, because on one hand, being prepared or wanting to stay in a country, but on the other hand, not being able to because of the visa conditions. I think there are a lot of people who have hopes and plans and dreams to stay in a place, but we sometimes forget how hard it can be to actually get a visa. Mm-hmm. We talk about it as if it's nothing, and that's just not true. And I consider myself incredibly lucky that I got the visa that I needed to stay here. But it is hard, and I have known also quite a few people that had to go back home because they couldn't stay. What is that feeling for you? Or what was that feeling for you when you noticed, okay, my visa is expiring and there is actually not really a way for me to stay here? That first moment, and then how did you come around and how did you make it a positive feeling for the future?
Yeah, absolutely. So it's actually not that my visa is expiring. It's that I can't afford to, with the prices going up, can't afford to apply for residency. So basically I have a partner here who we met here, and he is able to, he's on a sponsored visa and is able to apply for residency in January. So I never planned to stay in New Zealand and then met my partner and, you know, started having this great community and definitely not staying. Went to, oh, maybe like New Zealand's lovely. I would, you know, maybe stay to, oh, wow, I really want to stay. Like, actually, yeah. Maybe it is possible. My partner can apply for residency in January, you know, all of this. And that's kind of where we were going. We moved in together and we thought, great, let's start kind of saving up to try and get residency. And it almost, you open these floodgates of like allowing yourself all of a sudden to actually dream. You have these flickers of like, well, it would be great to stay here, but you know, I can't. And then it becomes possible and you're like, oh my God, dare I like think about 2 years? And I don't know, starting, I've always, from the moment I got here, I was like, I'd start an adults drama group here because there's not that, you know. And you start thinking about laying roots and that's a really scary and vulnerable thing to do. And we did that. And then unfortunately in September, I had a bike crash and got a really bad concussion and haven't been able to work properly since. And I've only been on really small hours and still 9-10 months out. I'm only on part time. And financially I'm just drained. And I think I was living in a bit of a fairy tale world and hadn't really put pen to paper and thought, hang on my income now, what are we really looking at? And unfortunately, I'd have to link to my partner's accredited visa first, and then we'd have to do residency. And I'm looking at about $7,000. And I, you know, I just don't have it. Since the crash, that's just so out of my, you know, out of my reach at the minute that,
yeah,
it kind of just hit me one day. I was literally writing it down, budgeting, and I was like, oh my God. And Canada had always been something that I was still on the list. It had to be done. And I was like, hang on, if I'm like trying to get out of debt from getting this visa in a year or so, Canada's off the table. There's definitely no way I could save for Canada. And I was like, and I don't really want to live like thinking, oh, can I get my daily coffee or will my card get declined, you know, or having to borrow money from my partner or my parents. I was like, actually, what kind of life am I living? Yeah, I'm living it in a wonderful place. I'm not living it to, you know, the fullest because I'm constantly, you know, unsure of financially. And it just sort of hit me and I thought, actually, I cannot stay. There's no feasible way that in the next year or so I'm going to have that money. So it was, oh my God, it was horrible. It was so horrible. And it was, I had to tell my partner, you know, and sit him down and be like, hey, I can't get residency. And he's so happy here. So we had to make the really difficult decision he'll be staying and I'll be going and we'll be like parting ways in November, which is so horrible to have to go through. And we're, you know, we are dealing with the best we can and we're doing what's right for us. And then I had to tell all my friends and that was heartbreaking. And then I'm a cleaner here. So I had to message all my clients and then tell my mum. And every time I said it over and over again, it was like breaking my heart. And I was really, really, really down for a good week or so. I just felt incredibly grief stricken, just so sad, so like angry, like this is so unfair, you know, like why isn't it easy to get your visa, why is it so much money? And then the idea of going back to the UK just did not, I don't see myself moving back, sorry mum, but I don't ever see myself moving back to the UK. It's just not for me. I lived next to mountains, I knew that's where I needed to be. So that added another layer of like, oh my God. And I was like, okay, right, what can we do? Like, I have to look forward to something in the future. And I thought, okay, maybe we go home for a little bit and then we give Canada a go. You know, it is where, you know, the next place on my list, it has been for years. Maybe that's what it is. Maybe fate is telling me it's time to go over and do that instead. And that kind of really helped, you know, when you're going for a bad time in any situation or at whatever level, having something to look forward to, getting your hopes and, you know, a little bit of future there really, really helps. So that's helped monumentally, you know, just looking at pictures of Canada, being like, oh, maybe I'll do a little road trip once I've like saved up some money back home, you know, where would I want to live? Where is like Wanaka in, you know, where will I enjoy? Starting to reach out to friends that have, you know, visited Canada or live in Canada, being like, what do you think?
Yeah.
Where do you think I'd enjoy? Like those little sparks of hope in that horrible, dreary gloom is just so important. And, it, you know, even if I was only able to go back to the UK, I'd find a way to get excited in that prospect, you know, okay, maybe I'll start a new group or start a new podcast, something passionate, and or go to a ladies' night, you know, what, how can I make UK exciting? You know, how can I get excited for that and not just sit in this horrible depression? So it's been really, really difficult, to be honest. It's been a really sad time, and one day I'll feel okay and the next day I'm absolutely heartbroken that I'm leaving, and then I'm excited for Canada, and a huge mix of emotions. But you know, like you said, it's not like, not everyone can stay. It's not on the cards. It's not a given. And to have had my 3 years here, I've got to be like so grateful that I was able to do that. And a reality check. It's part of traveling. You know, you're not just allowed into any country and allowed to stay there. And
very true.
I'm grateful for what I've been able to do and incredibly privileged. So, you know, you take it all in your stride and turn it on, you know, find the good bits in it.
And
I've had friends that have gone through it as well and were in exactly the same position, so I reached out to them and just, you know, it's nice to not feel alone in any one situation.
That is so true, especially when you can talk to someone who has experienced the same or similar things. It helps a lot. How, may I ask, how is this working out for you and your relationship then?
It was really hot. There was a few days where it was just so awkward and weird and horrible. He was heartbroken, you know, I was heartbroken. It was horrible. It was really, really, oh, you know, like after you've like had a big fight and it's awkward to talk to each other, and you're like, how do we normally talk to each other? This is odd. But I think, you know, I was really, Canada was always on the cards for me, and even when we first started dating, I didn't plan to stay in New Zealand, so this isn't like the biggest thing in the world. You know, it wasn't just completely unprecedented, but we talked about, you know, what's right for us. Do we stay together until November? Do we rip the band-aid off and break now, you know, which is so hard because there's so much love, and it's hard to break up when there's love, and, you know, you can't just feel really angry at each other for someone doing something wrong. But it's been a lot of, for me, again, self-compassion. Just comes back to that. My partner deals with things in like different ways, you know, exercise really helps, and diving into, you know, his job really helps, and making sure that he's talking to friends as well, and same with me, friends checking in, you know, like, is it okay? And some days and some days no, like any difficult time in a relationship. And again, I reckon there's people listening that have traveled and had exactly the same thing, falling in love over the other side of the world. And then one person has to leave for one reason or another, you know, relationships end. And I've had, again, grateful for the time we've had together, but it is what it is. It's almost easier that it wasn't a decision. Like when I looked at the numbers, I was like, there is literally no way I can stay, which almost helped a bit, you know?
Yeah.
I have to go.
Crazy. Yeah, it's crazy how external things can sometimes decide where our life takes us.
Yeah.
Wow. Thank you so much for being so open and vulnerable about your mental health, about your stories of when you were struggling, about your relationship. And just that sentence that you said, you would just make everything that comes next exciting so that you can look forward to it. I think that's such a big help for everything, and we need to remember that we can probably find a good thing and an excitement in everything we do. We just need to kind of want to see it and want to make it work. And
I totally agree. That's a great way to look at it. Always find a tiny glimmer of excitement and hope.
So thank you so much. I really love that you were sharing your story and just have that shift of mindset, even with thinking you will end up living in London forever, and now being like, I really can't imagine myself living in London anymore.
I hate it when I go back there now. Wild.
I feel like sometimes along the way, adventurers are born. Like
100%. Right. Yes. stepping out of your comfort zone is like a new layer each time. Yeah, totally.
Absolutely. I usually end every episode with quick three questions. Mm. And I will just keep it really short as well. But yeah, question number one, what do you actually miss from the UK all the time when you are away?
Cheese. I've been ready for these questions and I've thought about it. Cheese. Good cheese.
Yes. Go cheese. Wow. Very good. Very good. I hope you didn't listen to only the old episodes because I changed the questions a little bit later.
No, listen to lots of them, Yeah, I was ready for that.
Oh, you're so sweet. Go cheese. Wow. Funny. Okay. Question number two. What advice would you give someone to just, you know, leave the country or a big change in their life or with dealing with mental health, especially while traveling or being on the road?
I think two small bits. One, just do it. Just stop waiting. Stop trying to make everything perfect before you make the jump. Do it. You can tidy it up and make it perfect afterwards. And two, self-compassion.
Yeah.
Learn about self-compassion. Google it, learn it, practice it.
Perfect. I love that. And it's so true. Yeah. Okay, last question. Is there anyone you think should be on the show and should share their story?
Yes, two people. Sorry, I know that's not.
That's fine.
One is my friend Leah. She's from Germany and she lives in Wanaka now. And seeing her get her residency was so life-changing. And she was so emotional and excited about it that I just feel she's got a beautiful story to tell. And then there was another one that I thought of when I used to do my podcast. We had an older lady message and say that she's always wanted to do a ski season but went down the route of having family and kids, and listening to our podcast made her want to do a ski season again, and then she went and did one. And I think probably that is an incredible story to hear about and share from a totally different angle and a different age.
Wow. Yeah. Oh my god, thank you so much. And yep, that would be very interesting to hear a story from a person who didn't do it when she wanted to and then later on just says, it's never too late. That is very cool.
Yeah.
All right, Carla, thank you so much for your time. It's been a bit more than I usually go for, but I just wanted to hear it all. So thank you so much for sharing and for spending the time. For spending the time talking to me, sharing your story, and being that open.
Yeah, thank you for giving people a platform and open, safe space to share their stories and come together and share stories and culture and advice. It's beautiful. It's lovely.
Thank you. I love it. And I'm very grateful for everyone who decides to be on the show as well. And yeah, as always, I'm hoping that someone who is listening or watching is able to learn something, feel something, and take something from it. So thank you so much. And
thank you.
I hope I hear you next time. Bye.
This Free FM podcast was brought to you with support from New Zealand On Air.